Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, preseason camp is officially underway for A-State football. Also, the game themes for the six home games have been announced.
They have?
Bobo will run through all of those and tell you all the reasons why you can come out and enjoy an A-State football game. Soccer has began their exhibition schedule. We'll talk about that. But we're going to spend the bulk of our time today visiting with our very special guest, ASU System President, Dr. Brendan Kelly. How you doing, Dr. Kelly?
I'm fantastic.
Man, it's great to have you in. We've been wanting to get you in here for a while, and I guess it was almost a full year ago now that you were named the third system president in A-State history. Began the job last September. So has this move been what you expected? Has it exceeded your expectations to this point?
It's a great question, because anytime you move, you have a set of expectations, but you're moving to a place that, you know, you haven't been before. And you're moving to communities that you have to learn about. We were having dinner last night. We were asked that same question by somebody. And in so many dimensions, it has exceeded our expectations. Arkansas, as such a relational place, has been fantastic, because there's just a great sense of community and connectedness. The system and all of its dimensions, all of the member institutions, the team of chancellors, there's just a lot of great leadership where people are really focused on our core business, students. And for me, that's incredibly gratifying to be able to work with leaders who want to make the number one thing that they're focused on the success of the students that we're in service to. So, while I have learned a ton, lots of things I didn't expect to learn, lots of things I didn't expect that I would have to learn, my expectations and my wife Tressa's expectations have certainly been exceeded.
We're going to bounce around, and obviously the bulk of this will be kind of letting folks learn about you, but let's talk through the differences between, no matter what you call the role, if it's a chancellor or president, but being on a campus and that kind of being where your focus is versus, as you are the president of a system, seven campuses?
Yes.
So
yeah.
Talk folks through the differences.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I had to learn. I say that because I've been president of other institutions, so I've spent years and years and years doing that work, and I love that work. But when you're a system president, it's different. And anytime you walk into a new leader role, you have to learn about the dimensions of that leader role, because what you assume needs and desires are, that's never fully aligned, and you have to take the time to really lean in and understand that. I would simplify it this way. When you are working as a chancellor on a campus, you are working in the business of the university every single day. You are focused in on this tightly knit community of relationships and actions and being present for those things and making people feel welcome. Well, when you're a system president, you know, my office is across the street from the Capitol. I am on campuses all of the time, but not the same campus every day. You are working on the business of the university system, of the universities, of higher education in the state of Arkansas. And in a dynamic period where the expectations of students we're in service to are constantly changing, and we have to constantly change to go and meet those, we have to be more connected to employers, to communities, to the future of our economy. You have to have both types of leadership, because that gives us a chance to maximize. I'm connected to lots of presidents around the country who are not in systems, or they're not in systems that have that type of alignment, and the work gets harder. So one of the things that I've really focused on over the last year is just, let's get everybody aligned on the work that has to be done, and then what our individual leadership roles are in that, and what our leadership roles are in relationship to each other and our team. And that's been both educative, and incredibly exciting.
Before we get too far away from that, because you touched on something I wanted to ask about anyway. Because, quite honestly, you know, Arkansas State University being a system, in the grand scheme of things, still a relatively new thought. And having a president that serves a system, still relatively new in the grand scheme of things. So there are folks who struggle with the notion that the president is not on the Jonesboro campus. Mm-hmm. But I want you to talk about the importance of the thing you said. You guys in Little Rock, in the system office, you can walk out the door, walk across your street into the state capitol. Tell them why that's important and why Little Rock is where you should be based.
Look, at the end of the day, when you're in public higher education, you want to stay very connected to both the U.S. delegation and to the state legislature. And we help the legislature navigate through making legislation related to higher education. And sometimes there are aspects of legislation that are going to affect our business. And it's not higher education legislation. It's healthcare legislation or whatnot. You want to have a team on the field that's very present, that is a resource to that legislature, but is also very present so that we can make sure we're reminding people of the impacts of decisions. In the same moment, that is harder to find, that type of presence, than great educators who can be on campuses creating great experiences for students. So while I'm sitting across the street from the Capitol, here in Jonesboro, I've got a great chancellor in Dr. Todd Shields, who is nurturing excellence and creating great experiences for students. And I know that because every time I come to campus, I get a chance to talk to all of those constituents. And we get a chance to talk about things we're working on, and I get a chance to receive all of the wonderful things that they've done and accomplished. That's why you put a team on the field. There's not one person or one aspect. It affects all of these dimensions of people's lives. And we need lots of great people who are participating in creating those experiences. So for us to have a strong presence in the state is what protects our ability to deliver higher education in ways that are going to positively affect industry, grow the economy, and create the types of opportunities that are going to connect students to where they want to be post-graduation. If we got caught up in where that work occurs, then we're aiming at the wrong target. Because at the end of the day, that work occurs in the state capital of every state in the union.
I'm interested in hearing your personal journey and how you got to where you are now. So you grew up in Flint, Michigan, is that right?
I did.
Any other educators in the family?
My mother and father-in-law were public school teachers, high school and elementary school, respectively. My father-in-law was an elementary school teacher. He's absolutely remarkable, and you know that by the number of kids who, even as adults, keep running up to him to give him a hug. My mother-in-law was the same way. For me, no, education was not in our family. My parents were entrepreneurs. So we ran a lot of companies, and my brothers and I all had to start working for them when we were about eight. I remember the first job that my dad assigned me to do was go out and sweep the driveway off, because that's what you can do when you're really young. Except that portion of the driveway for that company was dirt. Didn't matter. I didn't notice at the time, and he just wanted me to get the skill set. We were raised in an environment where it was eat what you kill. When I got introduced to education, that was really in graduate school. When I was in graduate school, I got a chance to start working with people as a coach. I got a chance to teach classes for the first time. And I had never, ever, ever intended on a career in education. In fact, I was fighting against that.
Even in graduate school?
Even in graduate school, yeah. We got to the end of graduate school, and I had two job offers. One of them was from the largest advertising firm in Detroit, and the other was for a faculty position, and one paid three times more than the other. And we were weeks away from having our first child, who is now the mother of our first grandchild. And I was worried about paying for diapers, to be frank. That was a remarkable time. They offered me the faculty position, and I walked back to my wife, Tressa, and she was in the car. She was obviously very pregnant. And she said, well, so what happened? So I walked out of a meeting with the administration and the department at the university I was at. I said, well, they offered me the job. And she said, what did you say? I said, well, I chuckled. She said, why? I said, do you understand what they're paying versus what I'm being offered here? And she paused and she looked at me and she said, I think you'll be more satisfied with your life if you take that position at the university.
So she knew and you didn't.
This is not the first time that's happened in our lives. Let's be clear.
I do. I'm extremely interested in this chapter in your life, though. So this is at Eastern Michigan, right?
Yes.
So you got your undergrad there. You got your master's.
There.
You ended up going to Wayne State.
Mm-hmm.
You get your doctorate. But you and Tressa, for everybody listening, she's a doctor, too.
She is the original Dr. Kelly.
So she was a doctor before you.
Oh, you bet she was.
How long have you been together?
She was my freshman orientation group leader. So I met her the first day of college.
Wow.
It was pretty remarkable. She and I were both recruited to Eastern Michigan because they had one of the top speech and debate programs in the country. And when I say top, I mean one of the top three in the country. And going to be part of a program that had a tradition with so much excellence was pretty remarkable. So we knew of each other when we met. I did not expect her to be my orientation group leader, and I don't think she was particularly appreciative of the fact that I wasn't the best orientation group member. I think young Brendan Kelly missed the mark on that one. But we started dating the next semester. I mean, we were traveling almost every weekend with the team all over the country. So we got to know each other and we got to be friends. And we started dating in February of my freshman year. We were engaged in December of my sophomore year. And we were married shortly after the completion of my junior year.
Okay, so higher education as a vocation found you more than you found it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you pick Eastern Michigan based on such kind of a niche program. So what did you think it was going to be for? Like, what did you think that was going to turn into?
It's a great question. When you're in competitive speech and debate, you're getting a skill set that applies to every single context in your life. I would never call it a niche program because most of the history of the United States Congress, most presidents, I mean, they came out of training in that area, just like so many other very notable actors and leaders and the like. But I do understand, yes, compared to collegiate football, speech and debate does not attract as many audience members.
Most people listening to this have never known a person that's probably been in that program.
That's 100% true. I was attracted to the skill building, and it wasn't about the major, right? It wasn't connected to the major because we had people who were business majors, and they did all kinds of things at the university, but they came together to compete for a team the same way a basketball or football team comes together, right? They're studying whatever they've decided to study, but they're coming back together to do this common thing that is competing at the highest level in that particular area. And it doesn't matter what you're competing. It doesn't matter whether you're playing football or in music competitions or in speech and debate. When you get to compete against the best competition in the country, that is where excellence is derived. And we got a chance to do that. And that was really special. It was special for us to share as a couple. It was special for us to grow up in that. It was special to have a wedding where so many people who were part of that environment and that world were there, and we're still connected to them all of these years later.
So I got to ask, because every married couple at some point in time is going to argue. So basically, what's it like when two trained orators get into an argument?
This is not the first time I've been asked this question.
That was actually my next question.
So one, you are going to see a clash of skill sets right there. Okay. But the environment is already set. It doesn't really matter what skill level, what arguments are made. I am going to lose. Bear in mind that deciding to debate something is a choice. And I have learned in the 28 years that we've been married, I do not have to make that choice very often.
It's one of the wisest things a spouse can do is know when to pick your battles.
Listen, I stopped picking battles when we got married. Probably took me a little bit to learn that, but I understand it now.
But you've got three adult kids.
Yes, we do.
And I'm guessing that when it came to having them do their chores, you guys were a pretty good united front. I'm thinking those kids never had a chance at winning an argument from that side.
You are right. We did teach them those same skill sets. You are right. Tress and I are a united front. And if there is any discord, we will go and privately become aligned, right? When she tells me what we're aligned on.
You're going to executive session.
That's exactly. We're going to executive session. But When it came to raising our kids, no, there was a commitment that we were always going to be aligned. And then we had the wise idea that they should be endowed with the same skills that we have been endowed with in our life. So we started to teach them about speech and debate. And we'd have them go through little speech competitions at home at any age. They're 3 years apart. So, you know, sometimes you have a 9-year-old competing against a 3-year-old. But listen, under our rules, 3-year-old can win. And then we would have them present argument, because you always have kids who are arguing at the dinner table. And we had dinner at the dining room table every single night. We have very busy lives, but we were going to get together and make sure that our family was always intact and connected to each other. And that was just the habit we got into. Well, when kids got to a certain age and they'd have some disagreement about, you know, whether white milk or chocolate milk is the best, I'd go, okay, well then, I guess we have to present arguments. And we'd have, at any age, I don't care how old you are, you're going to adopt whatever the opposite position is to whatever you were arguing. And you're going to present an affirmative constructive, and we're going to time you, and you're doing it at the end of the dining room table. And then whoever you were arguing with is going to do a negative constructive, and we go through the whole cycle, and then we tell you who won.
I was going to ask if you guys had podiums. But it was the dining room.
Yeah, it was the dining room table, because they were, at that point, they're too small to need a podium. And as they grew older, we realized we had created monsters. Because when you start filling that toolbox, it comes back to haunt you. And you go, wow, that was a very salient analysis of whatever situation we're in. And now I might feel compelled to say yes when I wanted to say no.
I'm sure you overwhelmed a lot of dinner guests over the years.
There are some people who did not ask to come back. Yes. I can understand that being in the Kelly household at the dinner table could have come off as an intense experience.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with A-State System President Dr. Brendan Kelly here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. I want to get to where you are now, and I know you had several stops along the way to eventually land at Arkansas State, but I do want to go to your last stop at West Georgia, and you were president there from 2020 to 2024.
Yep.
And I know you accomplished a lot there, but one thing I'm interested to hear about is just overseeing a university that was going through a transition on the athletic side from Division II to Division I. So what was it like going through that?
So we were at West Georgia for almost 5 years. When I got there, I had known the previous president. I knew that was something that was discussed when he was president. It couldn't get it over the finish line for a lot of reasons. And then obviously COVID occurred and collegiate athletics went crazy. So we had, gosh, in year three, we started to see a change in our longstanding membership for our athletic conference, which was the Gulf South Conference. If you're in Division II and you are a football-playing school, you're talking about a conference that regularly has teams who are competing for national championships all of the time. It's an excellent, excellent Division II conference across all sports. But we started to look at our business model, and I've always been involved in collegiate athletics. I love athletics. I love what collegiate athletics does for universities. I believe very strongly that athletics is a calling card and an invitation into institutions. If you want to sign up for a class, you have to apply, you have to get admitted, you have to get registered, you have to come to campus, you have to go to class, I have to give you the syllabus, and then we get a chance to start engaging. But athletics gives you an ability to put on a polo shirt, buy a ticket, and you can come and be part of that family. And that is a remarkable thing that no other force in university communities has, including speech and debate, which saddens me, but that's just a fact. So when we were at West Florida, I was part of the team that started football, and that team won the national championship 4 years later. So we saw that we could be successful quickly if we were just making the right business moves. I've got a chance to serve in other environments in Division I, both in mid-major and P4. And when we got to West Georgia and we started to see that conference shift, I went to our CFO and our athletic director and I went, fellas, we're going to have to talk about this, because if we have a shift in football playing members, all you have to do is look on the map and see who else has football in the southeastern region in the United States. And you quickly start going, we're going to have to start traveling over to Texas and Louisiana and Arkansas. And if that's the case, our costs are going to go up a lot. And if we're in Division II, I don't see any opportunity for our revenues to go up, because we had maximized those opportunities. So we sat down and we started a multi-month process of analyzing what we might do. And we wanted to throw everything on the table. What if we ratcheted back to D3? What if we go up to D1? What does our current state look like? And we started with, gentlemen, let's agree that we should not do this. We should not go up to Division I. We should not make a greater investment. Let's just start with that premise, and we all did. About 3 months later, my CFO is sitting across from me, and he said, I don't know if we can not do this. And when your CFO is the one who says it, the AD saying it is one thing.
Yeah,
the president
yeah.
saying it is one thing. But when the CFO looks at you and goes, this business plan is what makes sense for us, now we're having a completely different conversation, because no longer is it about passion or where you sit in conferences or what your experience is like. This is all about a sustainable business plan for the institution.
But that was the last option when you started talking.
Last option. Absolutely the last option. When we started to socialize that, all of a sudden, we had athletic conferences who are reaching out to us, offering invitations. And I asked our consultant as we were going through, I said, so, you know, we have a number of athletic conferences who are offering us invitations. How many does this normally happen with? And he goes, oh, I've never seen this before. Because the number of invitations we had just so outpaced. I mean, normally, you might get one. You maybe, if you're lucky, you get two. And we were sitting in a vastly different place. But if you look at the location of that institution, if you look at the mid-major Division I landscape across the state of Georgia and the surrounding states, all of a sudden that became kind of a strategic opportunity for an awful lot of different conferences and different schools. And we were really pleased to be able to partner with the ASUN. That's a great conference. A lot of great partners, including University of Central Arkansas.
Yeah.
And Houston Davis was a huge supporter of us coming in.
You leave West Georgia and eventually come to Arkansas State, but what was it about A-State that, you know, made it an attractive job for you?
Well, one, I knew my predecessor here well, too. Chuck Welch and I have been friends for a long time, so I knew more about the ASU system than I would have otherwise, just because of that relationship. And when we started to look at the opportunity, I mean, at first, we were very happy where we were. And we were very successful, and there's no need to change. But higher education is important to me. And the changes that you're seeing in collegiate athletics are only outpaced by the changes that we're seeing in the rest of higher education at the same time. If this industry is really important, then we have to go and lead in new ways, lend our talents to education in a different fashion. And serving as a system head, especially in a system that is able to connect together two-year education and four-year education, which most universities systems in the country do not do. There are very few examples of a place where you can connect all of those talent pipeline producers together. And you include in that the fact that we have a flagship university inside that system, which is a core building block in trying to create an educational ecosystem for the state where we get more people participating in higher ed. I look at it and go, you know, I think Arkansas has an emerging economy. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity here for growth. I think higher education can be a key factor in that. And I wanted to go be part of that.
Not just now a system that includes two-year institutions and four-year institutions, but beyond, obviously, all the postgraduate programs on campuses, now that partnership with NYIT, having a medical school on campus and the vet school coming.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's 2-year, 4-year, and beyond.
That's the whole cycle. Normally, technical college systems and university systems are separate and they don't talk to each other. Here, we merge it all together as a team. Yesterday in, you know, our conference room in Little Rock, all of the chancellors were there, all of the executive team. And we're talking about the future of the ASU system and what all of us need to do together to make magic happen for all of the people we're in service to. That is tremendous. And when you have partners like NYIT, that offers a game-changing opportunity for this state and this region. You want to explore that? Let's go talk to everybody at St. Bernard's, because they'll be the first ones to say that's a critical piece of the pie. And you bring in a vet school, which is rare in the United States, but it's going to be a game-changer for the state of Arkansas and for A-State. That's remarkable.
One thing that Dr. Shields has done a really good job with ever since he arrived here is really just tying Arkansas State in with the local industries. And when he came in, he started talking about the steel industry and how important it is. And obviously, there's so many manufacturers in Northeast Arkansas that Arkansas State may have not had as good of a relationship with as they do now under Dr. Shields' leadership. But that's one thing that has really been a big emphasis over the last 3 years, and I'm sure you guys are on the same page with that. Another thing that I want to hear from you on is just the fundraising aspect of everything. And Dr. Shields was in on this podcast last month, and one thing that we talked about in depth was the fact that people are being asked for money from all different directions. They're used to it, and there's so much donor fatigue out there. But this whole one PAC initiative where there's one source asking for money can be really productive for the university, but at the same time, I think it's very appealing to all the local industry as well.
There are many things that Dr. Shields has done really well, in my view. And the connection to industry is a critical one. But that is a proactive connection to industry. I think if you're going to be the chancellor of a university, you have to be intimately connected with the industry leaders that are in your region. You just have to. Now, A-State serves as a state university, so there's connections that go all over the state. But Dr. Shields has done a really good job of setting the right standard for making sure that we are the answer is yes. Now, what is your question, partners? And to his credit and to many of our other chancellors' credits, when they're not the right person to receive, you know, when they can't solve the problem, they go, I know who can. And that type of attitude, that type of proactive leadership, I hope is just a standard for leaders in the ASU system. On the fundraising piece, I've done that consolidation before. That's not new to universities. That type of donor fatigue and the right hand not knowing what the left is doing is an acute problem, I would say. When Dr. Shields launched the One Pack, that is the right solution. And it is one that uniquely has to be led by the chancellor. And I say that because I could say, hey, folks, we're going to make sure that all fundraising is coordinated and whatnot. Well, each chancellor is going to go off and do that in their own way. But he came to that conclusion by listening to a lot of constituents externally, by gaining an understanding of how the people are doing the work internally, and then saying, all right, I'm taking management control so that I'm going to lead us into a unification, and I'm going to set that as an expectation for everybody who works for A-State. And that's why I say it has to be that the tip of the spear, when I've seen that work, is exactly the way Dr. Shields is executing it right now. And he is the one who is holding everybody else accountable, and he's the one who's held accountable for the eventual result. And I think we're going to get much better results and have much happier donors as a result.
To take the short step there to athletics as we kind of head down the stretch here. First, you worked with Jeff Purinton as part of the search that brought in Ryan Pinone, and then you turned around and you're part of the search to find Jeff's replacement, which eventually brought in Chris Pesman. You'll talk about that process, that search, and what made Pez the guy.
We had an exceptional collection of candidates. That was a highly desirable job. And Jeff did a great job, and Ryan Pinone is a perfect example of where Jeff's gifts really lie. He's an exceptional hire of coaches, and we were fortunate to be able to take advantage of those gifts. But we needed a AD who had the professional grit, which you only gain from experience, to really understand all of the endpoints of the consumer experience. Collegiate athletics is incredibly complicated right now. So we obviously need somebody who understands the business, is going to be aligned with the chancellor, aligned with the president, right? Has the personality attributes to be able to connect with people and connect communities together. All of those things describe Chris Pesman. But they also describe other people too. But the magic of Chris Pesman, in my view, comes from his attention to detail, and specifically in the way you are experiencing the environment you're in, whether you're a student athlete or a coach or a guest who is attending a game. You know, one of the things that impresses me so much about him, and you can watch him, just watch him walk around facilities on campus, because he notices these little things that everybody else notices too, but they don't point out. It just diminishes their experience. And he takes away those things. He's the one who picks up a piece of trash, even though he's over by the library and not in the football stadium. He's the one who is focused on how people are walking up and down stairs and how we might make that more comfortable for them. He's the one who's looking at how everybody is tailgating and is there a way to enhance that experience. And notice how I never said Chris Pesman is sitting there going, what do I need today? He wakes up in the morning going, what does everybody else need? Because if I make sure everybody has what they need, we're going to have the best experience possible. He has professional experience in management and facilities that brings wisdom to the role here. And probably the most important quality of his leadership, all of the gifts I just described aside, is the fact that that guy is excited to be here doing the work that we're doing in the place that we're doing it with the people who are doing it right now. And that energy and commitment matters a lot.
Every single day, you're in Little Rock, waving the flag for Arkansas State University. And we're going to be coming to you September 6th. So I can only imagine all the talk that's going to be happening that particular week. Has it already started?
Oh, we are deep in that planning. Yes. I get updated on it on a daily basis and have for several months. Yes, that is a big deal, and it's a big day, and it's important. It gives access to a football rivalry that has never occurred.
How shocked were you when you found out that they had never played?
I'm still, my jaw just drops every time. It's just so good for everyone. Why wouldn't you want rivalry like that? I mean, when I was appointed interim president at South Carolina, the archivist in the library gave me a book, and it was about the history of the university. And bear in mind, they were founded in 1801. Well, the rivalry with Clemson went back. They were fighting with each other before cars were out. Right? You go, that's good for a state. And I hope we can nurture that. Regardless, everybody's going to have a wonderful experience in Little Rock, get exposed to that game, get exposed to the communities that exist for a state that don't exist in Jonesboro. Sometimes when you're in the place where the university is located, you forget all of the constellation of supporters and fans who are everywhere else, and you're going to watch them show up on that day. And before, because there'll be a number of events that run up to it.
We got a lot of great stuff to look forward to this season. And obviously that trip to Little Rock in week two, going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see you there. I know you're going to be there week one,
absolutely,
though, against Southeast Missouri. And I can't wait to get the football season started. But this has been a lot of fun.
I'm glad.
Glad that we got you in studio and had a chance to learn a little bit more about you.
Well, hey, thank you for the invitation, the conversation. I really appreciate that.
And believe me, if I ever get an invite to your house for dinner, I'm not going to argue with anybody.
Let me invite all of the kids. You're both welcome.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Football officially underway with preseason camp now that started this past Thursday. Had a great time at the kickoff party this last Saturday as we kind of look ahead now, the team having its media day this Thursday. And one thing that came out this past week as we get closer to the season and the six home games are the game themes for this year. And this is something that you have worked extremely hard on. So I'll let you kind of go through what's coming up on the schedule.
First of all, I think one of the biggest things, regardless of what the themes are, is that for the third straight year, we're able to say, you know, there is a promotional item tied in with every game. That can't happen without a lot of cooperation from Red Wolf Sports Properties, our Learfield team, but not just them, but their cooperation and helping connect us with their partners who make that possible. Because there's not the budget for me to pay for a promotional item for six games. That cannot happen without Learfield and its partners. So they made it happen. So first of all, thank you to them. And then it's, you know, trying to pick promotional items that are different or unique or really just kind of match what's going on. Like on August 30th, you know, when opening night, I always want there to be an item that's got the schedule on it. We've done a couple different things, but, you know, we haven't put it on as a cooling towel. Well, 6 o'clock August 30th, maybe it's a good time to have a cooling towel with the entire schedule on it.
I think that's extremely fitting.
The Iowa State game, 3 o'clock on September 13th. We want a bunch of people in there. We want it to be loud. We understand it's probably going to be hot. So why not find an item that is both a fan and a noisemaker in one? That's the giveaway item for Iowa State, thanks to St. Bernard. You know, you spin it forward, you know, October 4th, honoring the 1975 team. So literally have a banner, a miniature banner that comes with a suction cup where you could hang it up. It's got the 75 team and their accomplishments and the schedule they ran through 11-0.
Love it.
50 years ago.
Love it.
You know, homecoming. It's homecoming. So Coke is helping us. They're a bunch of pom-poms for homecoming because it's the time you come and cheer your team on the most. You get to November, Heroes Day, so E.C. Barton and companies help the digital camo cap, but it's got the A-State logo with the stars and stripes in it. The American flag A-State logo comes back on that cap for Heroes Day. And then, you know, you really want to go out with a bang on Fan Appreciation Night, November 20th. It's a Thursday night. We're on worldwide on ESPN.
Taking on the Cajuns.
Yeah, you know, so you are wanting to, you know, you want to thank the fans who have been there. You want to urge fans to not just get there, but get there early. Everybody loved the DeMario bobblehead a couple years ago, including Commerce Solutions, which made that thing possible. They've been sitting on go to do another one, just kind of waiting for the right idea to come around. And at some point, I don't remember when or why, but it hit me, well, I wonder if we can make a bobblehead of Hal on his motorcycle. Talked with our company that we work with on those, and they said, not only can we, here's kind of an example of one we've done in the past.
Love
I said,
it.
Let's roll. And they said, let's roll.
You know, I cannot wait to see that.
I've got pictures of the kind of the one that was sent to me to make sure everything was good to okay it for production. It's cool. People are really going to like it and looking forward to getting them here and hand them out on November 20th.
Lots of good stuff coming up. And, of course, football season, you mentioned that date, August 30th. That's the season and the home opener against Southeast Missouri. Meanwhile, A-State soccer played the first of two exhibitions this past Sunday as they hosted Lindenwood. They're going to play their final exhibition at Little Rock. That's coming up this Thursday. And then the regular season opener will be a week from Thursday, August 14th, as the Red Wolves will host Texas A&M Corpus Christi. So
those Islanders.
Yeah, they're getting the season started. I know Coach Dooley and his crew are excited to get back out there.
They've started us off. I mean, they're out there. I mean, that's three times they're playing. And at that point, even that Corpus Christi match, you're still nearly a week away from the first day of class. So they're out there before the semester even officially gets started.
Just how impressive is Dr. Kelly, by the way?
I enjoyed that. You know, he and I, it's one, kind of full disclosure, we've been the same place at the same time a lot of times, but those places are always crowded.
A lot going on.
A press conference, a game. And so, honestly, even my first chance to really, kind of get to know much about him or have much of a conversation, and that was pretty neat.
K Can you imagine what it's like at their dinner table?
Just go eat. I'm sure the food's good, but I'm gonna sit there and shut up.
Two speech and debate pros, and yeah, I'm sure their kids are pretty good debaters at this point as well. Thanks to Dr. Kelly for coming in and hanging out with us today. We always appreciate you joining us, and we hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.